I keep something for sentiment, and or offer something to friends or family who'd want a memento. Then I'd donate to a shelter. You donate a spangly slut top and fancy-ass doomy shoes to a shelter? Oh, well, recalculating, Peabody got in the elevator with Eve. If the clothes are in decent shape, somebody, not me, could sell them or put them on consignment at a vintage shop, make a little money or a decent chunk, depending. The top made it here from Tennessee. Maybe the first owner did too. You can buy vintage stuff online. Eve said, shit. Not only because that rang true, but because other cops started crowding into the elevator. But, Peabody continued, that's sort of a crapshoot, right? You can't be sure it's going to fit. You don't know how it feels until you can touch it. I mean, people buy clothes online all the time because the return's easy, but a lot of vintage shops have no return or tough return policies. People might... She broke off, hustling after Eve when Eve shouldered her way out the door at the next stop. They might buy a vintage evening gown, right? Wear it to some deal, then want to send it back. So it's not as easy to return to specialty stores as it is to think, this sweater's itchy or it's too small in the bust and return it. The jeans were snug on Elder. You want jeans to fit snug. No, the waist was small on her. The waist hit way down here. Eve tapped the side of her hand down her hip. Harvo called them low-rise. No, ultra-low-rise. They left that indentation because he had to force the buttons closed. She was slim, but the way they fit, that low on the hip, they were a little small. So were the shoes, but not by much. How would he know Elder's size? Did it just happen to be nearly the same as the mother's? Elder would have been wearing shoes when he grabbed her. That's right. Eve shifted to Peabody on the glide. He might have bought those shoes after and could only get them in the slightly too small. Maybe the rest of the clothes, too. But it was the fit of the jeans that threw the size off. A waist is going to be smaller than mid-hip. We've got a better chance of finding the vendor if he bought the clothes in the last 2 weeks. Yeah, we do. And we're going to get started on that. Let's start with vintage shops in the city first. He's not just looking for clothes, but a specific era, a specific size. Do a search. Send me half. We work the links first and follow up in the field. This could be a break. His need to replicate, to be exacting about it. That limits his choices, so it narrows our search. I'll get it started. Peabody went straight to her desk. Eve noted Jenkinson's and Reinecke's empty stations. Where's the tie? She asked Baxter. Caught one. Woman beat to death during possible break-in. Santiago and Carmichael? Caught one too. Guy took a header out of a 10-story window, Midtown South, landed on a delivery truck. Because the truck was parked on the sidewalk? Baxter grinned. No, sir, boss. It was parked at the curb on West 57th. So, physics and gravity being what they are, he either took a flying leap or got tossed. At least he didn't land on a pedestrian. Eve hit her office for coffee, updated her board and book with the lab data. She snatched an incoming and saw Dauber had taken her at her word and sent what he got when he got it. She added the highlighter and setting powder, tones, brands, to her board and book. Eve considered contacting Elder's mother or her cohab, but decided to try the friend and co-worker. A little less painful, maybe. She ended the call as Peabody came in. Got the list. More than I figured, just in the city. A lot more if you hit the other boroughs and the burbs. But some of the more standard secondhand shops have vintage sections, so, yeah, we'll want to include those. Elder, size 4 or 6, depending on the cut, according to her coworker pal. It's all about the cut, Peabody agreed. Like if I wanted to try something ultra-low rise, I don't even want to think about it. That style comes around again, I've got to take a hard pass. I did look, and it did come around for like a couple years in the 30s, but with wide legs, like flared out from the knees down, so not the same. Well, that sounds incredibly ugly. I'm going with you on that. And with my body type, I don't want to think about that either. We've got 10 each, Peabody said. Then turned as Detective Norman stepped into the open doorway. He wore yesterday's suit with a navy tie. Sorry to interrupt. I wanted you to know Becca Muldoon showed up alive and well. I've just come from verifying that and getting her statement. She eloped, took off to Las Vegas with a customer, got married, gambled, partied. She got back this morning and is filing for divorce. Or not. It, she claims, depends. Okay. Alive and well is good. I'm gonna catch you up on where we are. She stopped when her comp issued an alert. Hold that. She read it out, dragged her hands through her hair. We've got another missing woman. One who fits the physical parameters. Mary Kate Covino, age 25. Works at a marketing firm, though, regular hours. Not at a bar or club or joint, no night work. Still, she could be Elder's sister, Dallas. Yeah, she's just the type. Norman, if you're clear, I'd like you to start on a list Peabody's generated. We're going to go talk to Covino's roommate to start, but I don't want this list to hang too long. It could be a break. I can be clear. I'm gonna fill you in, Eve said as she rose, and drop you off at your house. And we'll keep you in the loop on Covino one way or the other. We can hope she's like Muldoon. We can hope, Eve agreed. But she didn't see it. 10. Before. While Violet nursed the baby, she stroked her daughter's cheek with one finger. The sensation was so lovely, and if it felt oddly familiar, she set that aside. As far as she was concerned, her life began the moment she'd opened her eyes on the road, in the dark, and seen Joe's face. He was her world now, he and Joella. Her family. She was Violet Fletcher, wife, mother, and oh, how she loved being both. The caretaker of Sweetwater, the lovely old home named nearly 200 years before. For weeks after he found her on the road, Joe checked religiously for reports of a missing woman, but no one looked for her. She knew, absolutely, no one would, because Violet hadn't existed before Joe. In her heart, her mind, in every cell of her body, she believed Joe had brought her back to life. He'd taken care of her, had given her a home and a purpose. A job at first, she thought now, as the baby nursed and the sunlight beamed through the windows of the nursery. A guest room once, one where she'd slept those first months during her recovery, during the days and nights she'd spent cleaning the house, tending the garden, learning to cook while Joe worked. She'd learned, had worked hard, had been grateful and content to be only his housekeeper, even as she'd fallen so completely in love with him. Everything she did, the washing, the polishing, even the painting when he finally agreed to let her, she did with an open heart. She believed, absolutely, that purpose, to tend to Joe, to tend to the house, helped her heal. Then, another miracle. He'd wanted her, and he'd loved her. She hadn't believed he could or would. She'd taken the last name, Blank, because her life before the moment he'd saved her was just that. But on a perfect spring day, in the garden she'd helped tend, she took his name, took his ring, and pledged her life to him. To avoid questions, they'd made up a past for her. A spotty one, but it served. But the past meant nothing. And now she was Violet Fletcher, Dr. Joseph Fletcher's wife, mother of Joella Lynn. When the baby slept, perfect mouth slack and milky, she tucked her in the crib in the nursery she'd painted a soft, sweet green. She smoothed the downy cap of white blonde hair and thanked God or fate or the sheer luck that had put her in this place. She vowed she'd be a good mother, a loving one, a fun one, a patient one, a caring one. "I'll always be there for you," she whispered. "And so will your daddy. He's the best man in the world." While the baby napped, she stripped the master bed, put on fresh sheets, started the laundry. Joe, the sweet man, had offered, and more than once, to hire a cleaning service. But she loved tending the house, loved making it shine. She was a homemaker now. By the time evening set in, casting its shadows so the Spanish moss dripped from the oaks like art, she sat in one of the rockers on the wide veranda, the baby once more at her breast. Inside, the house sparkled, and a roast chicken browned in the oven. She smelled roses and magnolia as she sipped from a glass of sweet tea, and smiled when the car turned in and drove toward the house. Her heart just swelled as he got out of the car and started toward her. "Welcome home, Dr. Fletcher." "No place I'd rather be, Mrs. Fletcher." He bent down, kissed her, then touched his lips to Joella's head. "Has she been a good girl today, Mama?" "Best girl ever, Daddy." "Sit down a minute, will you? Dinner's got a while yet, and I brought out a glass for you." When he did, poured himself a glass, she shifted the baby to her other breast. "Tell me about your day." He reached for her hand, held it while they rocked on the veranda, in air smelling of roses and magnolia. Now. Mary Kate woke in the dark. For a moment, one blissful moment, she thought she was home in her own bed. She started to roll over, slide back into sleep, and her wrist shackle dug into her wrist as the chain reached its limit. She remembered. For one moment, one horrible moment, she fell into desperate despair. She was alone, held prisoner by some madman who thought he was a child about half the time. No one knew where she was, so how could they find her? She was supposed to be basking in the sun on a beach, romping in the ocean with Teague, not chained up in some room by some crazy old man who wanted his mommy. But no, no, Teague had dumped her, the son of a bitch. And surely, even if he hadn't, even if they'd gone to the beach, she'd have been home by now. Surely she'd been in this nightmare for more than 4 days. It felt like 4 weeks. 4 years. Someone had to be looking for her by now. She had family, friends, co-workers, people who cared about her. The police were looking for her by now, of course they were. She just had to hang on until they came. Remembering, she clapped her hands, and when the light came on, she let out a long breath. She saw breakfast, some sort of cereal in a bowl, a disposable container of milk, a cup of what would be, it always was, orange juice, another that would be coffee, probably cold now. That was fine. She never drank it because it had a hard, bitter taste she suspected came from drugs. He always woke her, if she wasn't awake, when he brought breakfast. Why was this different? She started to sit up, and the ugly headache had her letting out a moan. Her brain felt too big and somehow clogged. But she remembered, at least a little. He'd brought her dinner. Chicken fingers, some kind of fake chicken, with soy fries, green beans. Well, more gray than green. A tube of water, a cup of tea. Then he'd sat in the bolted down chair. He'd actually asked if she'd had a good day. She'd wanted to hurl the food back at him, but she'd eaten the food, stay strong, even complimented it, which made him beam at her. She tried telling him how the wrist cuff hurt, but he just smiled and said she had to wear it to stay safe. She'd pushed a little, as carefully as she could manage, but he'd gotten that look in his eyes, the one that warned her. She would have dumped the tea, but he sat and sat and gave her no choice. And she'd felt the world slipping away. Now her head hurt from whatever he'd put in the tea, and she felt vaguely sick to her stomach. It was sore, too. And when she started to press a hand against it, she felt a dull pain. And the silver ball in her navel. He'd pierced her. He'd violated her body while she'd slept, helpless under his goddamn drugs. The outrage shot her to her feet, pain screaming. She nearly grabbed the ball, ripped it out. Then she stopped herself, stood, breath heaving. She'd hurt herself. Then he'd hurt her. He'd put it back in. Then she saw the two little cups, like they put meds in for people in the hospital. One held some sort of white cream, the other a clear liquid. Her hand shook as she reached for the carefully handwritten note beside them. Mommy, use the cream on your pretty butterfly spreading its wings on your back. Use the other on your pretty new earrings and belly button when you turn them. Be gentle. I knew you needed your beauty sleep, so I left you breakfast. Have a good day, your baby darling. Oh my God, what butterfly? But her hand shot first to her ears. He'd pierced her there, too, multiple times. She felt the soreness as she clamped her hands over the little studs. Tears spilled as she shifted, tried to run her hands over her back. She felt the slight difference, traced it as best she could. Jesus, it's huge! He pierced me! He tatted me! He's making me her. But he wouldn't. She wouldn't become somebody else no matter what he did. She was Mary Kate Covino. The tears fell, and she went through her routine of naming off her family, her friends, what she did, what she liked. And she used the hydrogen peroxide on the piercings, did her best to smear the cream on the tattoo she couldn't see. Then she banged on the pipes, banged and banged until she finally heard the answer. Not alone. Eve decided to take the roommate first. When you lived with someone, they knew stuff, often things family might not. A good building, she noted. Again, Lower West Side. Definitely his territory. The obviously well-rehabbed red brick building had door cams, an intercom for buzzing in, and required a swipe and a code for entry otherwise. She's a subway ride or a 15 to 20 minute walk from her workplace, Eve calculated. The boyfriend's bars only about 2 blocks away. So we stalked her coming and going from the bar. Tells me she must have had some sort of routine. She walked to the door, mastered in. Let's see if the roommate confirms that. 6th floor, 608. Since Eve judged the elevators in the small lobby, recently cleaned from the smell of it, likely reflected the maintenance of the building, she pressed a call button. Family's in Queens. Data says she's lived here for 3 years with the same roommate. Worked for the marketing firm for going on 4, right out of college. No criminal bumps. They stepped into the elevator, one that didn't make strange noises, and Eve called for the 6th floor. Peabody read off the data. Roommate, Cleo Bett, sous chef at Perfecto. That's like a block from the bar. Upscale place. They got out on 6. Good soundproofing, Eve thought, or everybody was out. She buzzed at 608. Margie, I said I'd let you know when... The woman who yanked open the door stopped. Sorry, I thought you were my neighbor a couple floors down. Look, it's not a good time, so... She broke off again when Eve held up her badge. Oh, thank God! She grabbed Eve's arm, all but pulled her into the apartment. Did you find her? Is she okay? I'm sorry, we just got the report. Lieutenant Dallas, Detective Peabody. Oh, I was hoping... Wait! I know those names. We saw the vid, Mary Kate and I. Oh, Jesus, you do murders. Miss Bett, Peabody stepped up in her soothing mode. We don't know that anything's happened to Mary Kate. We're here to help find her. Maybe we could sit down. Okay, yeah, sorry. She closed her eyes a moment, a tall, mixed-race woman with a lot of curly brown hair bundled back. She wore gray sweatpants, a black tank top, and looked terrified. But she gestured to chairs in a small, very tidy, very female living area. I'm sick, she went on, because I didn't know. I thought she was... I have to pull it together. Why don't you start at the top, Eve suggested, from the beginning. She clasped her hands with her long, slender fingers and short, unpainted nails. Mary Kate was supposed to take a trip to the beach for a few days, with Tegan Stone. They've been seeing each other for a few months. She was kind of... Okay, she was dazzled. He's gorgeous, right? He owns Stoner's, a bar over on 7th. I didn't see when she left because I was at work. I work most nights. I know she planned to take her rollie, her suitcase, with her, go down to the bar, spend the night with Teague, and leave first thing the next morning. When was this? June 3rd. I mean, that's the night she went to the bar. I didn't think anything when she didn't tag me because, dazzled, I just figured she was having fun, all into him. But she wasn't, Eve prompted. They didn't go, and she didn't stay there that night, according to that shithead Teague. See, she was supposed to be home last night, work night for me. I saw she wasn't here when I got home, and I figured she'd stayed at his place. I was tired, and I just went to bed. But I tried to tag her this morning and got nothing. No connection. So I tried Teague. He was pissed at me because I woke him up, and he said he hadn't seen Mary Kate since she left the bar the night before they were supposed to go, how she'd gotten too pushy and clingy, and he cut her loose. And he said her stupid suitcase was still at his place, and tell her to come get it, and if she didn't get it, he was just going to set it out on the street. Her eyes filled. Shithead. Sounds like, Peabody agreed. I told him how she hadn't been home, and he's all, that's not his problem. I told him to get fucked, and I called the condo she'd booked at the beach. That's when I found out they hadn't shown, and she hadn't canceled either. She'd have canceled, and she'd have come home so we could bitch about the shithead, so I could let her cry on my shoulder. You're good friends. Cleo managed a smile for Peabody. Really tight, yes. Lucky. I wanted this apartment, but I needed a roommate so I could afford it. It's really close to work. It's a nice place, good neighborhood. She answered the ad, and we clicked. We really clicked. Like I said, I work most nights, but when we have a day off or I have a night off, we'd hit the vids or a club. Stoners for a drink. Then he wound her in. He's got a way. She'd go down there four nights a week, sometimes five. She'd bus tables or serve drinks for free. And stay the night? Eve asked. Nope, never. He'd take her up. He lives over the bar for a quickie sometimes, but no sleepovers. His rule, right? She'd head over there about 8 and be home about midnight. 4 or 5 nights a week. Yeah. I'm gonna say I didn't like it. He was using her. But all that dazzle. To illustrate, she did jazz hands by the sides of her face. The trip was her idea, and she made all the arrangements. She was really excited about it. Then he dumps her like that? Shithead. Was the night he dumped her one of her usual nights? Sure, yeah. Did he ever walk back here with her? Cleo snorted. No. After pressing her fingers to her eyes, she rubbed her face hard. I'm going to say we came the closest we ever have to a serious fight when I said he treated her like crap and started pointing out how. She dropped her hands. I backed off because things were going to blow. You don't want to blow up with a friend over some asshole guy. She just had to get through it and over it. Now she smiled just a little. She's the most sensible person I know, but she had it stuck that she was going to be the one to change him. Things were going to be different with her. Do you know what I mean? Peabody nodded. Yeah, most of us have been there. Maybe he did something to her. I mean, I don't see how, but... We'll talk to him, Eve said. Did she ever mention being uneasy about the walk home? About anyone bothering her? No. And she's careful. A lot tougher than she looks. Teague found some weak spot because it wasn't really like her to get walked over like that. She wouldn't take off either. She wouldn't. I had to tag her mom just to be sure she didn't go home. To be sure. Now her family's half crazy, too. They haven't seen or heard from her. She'd never do that. I called her boss, too, and nobody's heard from her. Okay. Can we see her room? Oh, sure. The two bedrooms faced each other down the short hallway that ended with the shared bathroom. Cleo gestured to the room on the right. Eve saw neat, organized, and again, female in the quiet pastels, the mountain range of fluffy and fancy pillows on a bed covered with a pale blue spread. Thin curtains in a peachy tone framed the single window. For decor, Eve decided. The table, painted the same blue as the spread, stood in front of the window and held a mini data and communication unit, what Eve took to be a family photo, all smiling faces and a tree loaded with lights and ornaments, and a small, slender vase swirling with pastel tones. An oval mirror, framed in pale green, stood over a pale blue dresser with drawers painted to alternate the peach and green. Atop ranged a trio of fancy bottles, a faceted glass box, and a slim tray holding little candles. No sign, Eve thought, of packing for a trip, outfits considered, tossed aside. Would you say this is how her room typically looks? Oh, absolutely. If a hurricane blew through, MK would have everything back in its place within an hour. With a quick laugh, Cleo pointed across the hall to a room with bold, bright colors and cheerful disorder. I'm the hurricane. Mary Kate, and her sister Tara help decorate my room and the rest of the place. They've got vision, and Mary Kate needs order and, well, pretty, like she needs to breathe. Eve imagined Mary Kate felt short of breath at the moment, but didn't say so. We'd like to look through her things. I know it's an intrusion, Cleo, Eve continued when she saw Cleo's anxiety, but any detail can help us find her. I'd also like to send someone from EDD to take her D&C unit in, run a thorough search. That's for work. I mean to say, she's really strict about that. Anything personal, she used her link or tablet. She wouldn't even contact her mom from her home comp. And still, Eve said. Okay, yeah, anything. Thanks. Peabody, contact EDD. Have this unit picked up. As she spoke, she opened the closet door. They spent an hour, and while they found nothing that pointed to where Covino might be or the identity of who held her there, Eve added to her picture. Girly, organized, and, from her scan of the computer, hardworking. Family and friend-oriented, and with a strong enough personality to have her less tidy roommate keep their shared space in order. Let's walk down and have a conversation with the boyfriend. Eve scanned the block when they came out of the building. Plenty of places along here to keep tabs on the building. Shops, restaurants, and with the good weather, sitting outside having coffee or whatever. Still, he had to see her to want her. The bar. Peabody fell into step beside her. Elder and Ho both worked at bars, and Covino started hanging out in one, pitching in because of asshole boyfriend. He's trolling bars, looking for women who tick off points on his list. Which means he's been at this for months, most likely, not days, not weeks. This takes time. There'll be others who didn't make the cut, but it took time to eliminate them and select the ones that clicked for him. Others, Peabody agreed, who wouldn't be as easy to grab. They walked home or to transpo with somebody, or he found out they carried a sticker, or none of the three we're looking at had kids. Yeah, young for it, but it happens. Good point. His mother's his mother and nobody else's. She paused at a shop with an outdoor flower cart, then with a gesture to Peabody went in. Your basics, as Eve saw it. A small produce section, a tiny dairy one offset with shelves of dehydrated milk, eggs, soy products. Candy, snacks, general household stuff. She walked to the counter where the clerk finished ringing up a sale. Enjoy the day, she said to the departing customer, offered Eve and Peabody an easy smile. Help you? Maybe. Eve held up a badge and the photo of Covino on her link. Do you recognize this woman? Why? She's been reported missing. We're looking for her. Oh my God. No. I mean, yes, I recognize her. MK. She's in here several times a week. As nice as they come. But wait. When she was in last, I guess last week, she said she was going on a little trip so she wouldn't be in. The clerk, a tiny black woman with the tat of a sinuous branch of ivy running from the inside of her elbow to her wrist, let out a huff of relief. She went on a trip. No, Eve said, she didn't. She came in here regularly. Yeah, yeah. For flowers once a week, for sure. And just for this and that. Are you sure she didn't go on that trip? She was awfully excited about it. Yes, ma'am. Ivy, I'm Ivy. I don't know what to think. I'd hate for anything to happen to that girl. Nice as they come. Did you ever notice anyone, maybe who came in when she did? A male, likely Caucasian and in his 60s? I get customers like that, sure, but nobody I noticed especially. If I'd seen anybody giving her the eye, the wrong kind of eye, I'd have said something. A sweetheart's what she is. Takes time to chat a minute. Most are too busy or just don't bother. She asks how I'm doing. My grandson, he works now and then after school or when I can squeeze him into it. He's got a little crush on her. Ivy immediately looked horrified. Zell would never relax. Do you think Zell might have noticed someone you missed? I can ask him. I can sure ask him. He's coming in soon. Should be here any minute. We have another stop to make in the neighborhood. Then we'll be back. We'd like to talk to him then. Absolutely. I hope nothing's happened to that girl. I'm going to say prayers for her. Makes sense she'd use that shop, Peabody said when they walked outside again. And if he was watching her, getting her routine down, he may have gone in after her at least once. She talks to people. The shopkeeper, the grandson. I'm betting the glide cart operator where she got her street coffee, or the bakery clerk where she picked up bagels or muffins. Let's pull in a couple uniforms to hit the shops and restaurants along this stretch, from her subway stop to her apartment and to the bar. And we'll check the same from her workplace. I'll get that started. While Peabody arranged it, they took the turn to the bar. A lot of people out and about, Eve thought, enjoying the cafes, breezing in and out of shops, just strolling, enjoying the weather. Perfect time of year for it, she commented. Did he wait, I wonder, for the weather? So he could sit outside and watch, or wander along behind her? Why trudge along in the cold when you can stalk in the warm? When they reached the bar, Eve stood a moment, studying it. Night spot. Doesn't open until 5, and that's to grab the drink after work crowd. We'll try upstairs. She mastered through the door to the apartments over the bar. In this case, she didn't give the single gray-doored elevator with its frowny-face graffiti an instant's consideration. They took the stairs to the 3rd floor. She noted Stone's apartment door had double security locks and a cam. She buzzed, waited a few beats, buzzed again, then just leaned on the buzzer. Maybe he's not in there, Peabody suggested. Cam light blipped from red to green. He's home. The door banged open a half inch to a double security chain. What the fuck? The fuck is this? Eve held up her badge. We'd like to speak with you, Mr. Stone. Then come back when I'm not sleeping. Happy to, with a search warrant, and we can have this conversation at Cop Central. She turned away. Wait a damn minute. He slammed the door, chains rattled. He yanked it open again and stood in a pair of black boxers that showed off a tanned, buff body. He swept a hand through a lot of disordered hair, milk chocolate brown with a lot of sun-kissed highlights. I'm not even awake yet. I own the bar down below. I work nights. What's this about? Mary Kate Covino. For Christ's sake! Whiny woman goes off to sulk somewhere, and I get harassed over it? I need some goddamn coffee. We'd like to come in, Mr. Stone, unless you'd like to have this conversation in the hallway or down at Central. He made a come-ahead gesture, slammed the door behind them, then stalked off in his boxers to, Eve assumed, get his goddamn coffee. The elevator and stairwell might be dicey, she concluded, but Stone lived lush. Snappy furnishings in manly browns and blacks, slick double-sized gel sofa, roomy leather chairs, an entertainment screen that spanned an entire wall. His dining area held a glossy black table with some sort of ornate copper centerpiece. A serving bar displayed several fancy decanters with the glass doors under it showing off sparkling glasses and a full wine fridge. He stalked back out with a large white mug. Look, I'll tell you what I told a nosy roommate. I don't know where she is and I don't care. Guess what? It's not my problem. Eve held up her badge again. Guess what? I'm making it your problem. 11. He walked over, dropped down in one of his leather chairs, gulped coffee. So check the half-crap of a condo she rented on the Jersey Shore. Her idea of a freaking love nest. She probably went there to cry in her pillow. Gee, why didn't we think of that? Eve let the sarcasm drip. Stone just shrugged. You have a lot of contempt for a woman you were recently involved with. Involved's a strong word. We had sex once in a while, for a while. It ran its course, and I showed her the door. Arrest me. If there was a law against being a complete dick, we would. Eve raised her eyebrows at Peabody's comeback, but said nothing. Unfortunately, she continued, there are so many we'd run out of room for them. Listen, sister, detective. Eve stepped closer to stare him down. Detective Peabody and Lieutenant Dallas. And I believe my partner has just let you know you're nobody special. You were in a sexual relationship with Ms. Covino. We had sex, not a relationship. Several nights a week she worked in your bar. She helped out. Her idea. And she takes all that and blows it up into something. Not my problem. Yet you agreed to take a trip with her to this half-crap condo on the Jersey Shore. He shrugged. So I didn't say no right off. I was thinking about it. Maybe I even said, sure, we'll do that, fix it up. I changed my mind. And she couldn't handle it. Dragged her dumbass suitcase into my place, puts it in the back like she owns the joint. Piss me off. Did she help you out in the bar that night before you changed your mind? Sure. I was busy. I run a popular place, so I didn't get around to it for a while. I tried letting her down easy. Told her I wasn't going to be able to make it, and she got pushy. Not my problem she took off work. Not my problem she put down a deposit. I can see she was gonna make a scene out of it, so I cut it off. We're done. There's the door. He shrugged again. Women just can't take the moment and move on. We had some fun. That's it. It's why I've got a firm policy. None of them stay the night. Makes them get too cozy. And what do? Leave something. A scarf, a hair thing, lip dye, whatever, so they have an excuse to come back. Pathetic. Like I don't get that. Idly, Eve wondered why so many ugly people had beautiful faces. What time did she leave? How the hell do I know? I didn't clock her out. About midnight, he said when Eve stared. Left her damn suitcase. Did you try to contact her so she could come back for it? Hell no! That's what they want. I give it a week, then I toss it. Whatever they leave. Did you notice anyone in the bar when she helped you out? Male, white, in his 60s, probably alone? Hell, we get plenty of those. It's a popular place. If they're not causing trouble, I don't pay much attention to old men. Look, she's just trying to get my attention. That's what they do. Do they? Well, in this case, she has ours. Where is Ms. Covino's property? Where she left it? Like I'm gonna drag it up here, give her an excuse to come to the door? Put some clothes on, open the bar. We'll take it with us. You expect me to get dressed? Since I can't arrest you for being a complete dick, I'd be thrilled to arrest you for indecent exposure. You've been flashing your actual dick since you sat down. While it's not very impressive, I could make a case. Put some pants on. Ms. Covino's suitcase is evidence. He went from slouch to poker straight. You've got no business talking to me that way. I pay your fucking salary. Dallas, Lieutenant Eve. File a complaint. But put your pants on first and give me my evidence. He pushed up, stormed to a closet in the hallway off the bedroom, came back with the suitcase. Evidence, my ass. Funny. This doesn't look like the back room of your bar. So I forgot I brought it up here to get it out of the way. When she comes slinking back after her snit, I'm going to demand an apology from all of you. Good luck with that. Eve pulled up the handle, rolled the suitcase to the door. Thanks for your time, and for revealing yourself to be an asshole. She shut the door. Let the roommate know we have the suitcase. It's now evidence, and we'll return it as soon as possible. I'm so steamed. Shake it off. Eve shoved the handle down, hefted the bag up. It had weight to carry it down the stairs. He's nothing. I did admire your remark about not enough cage room to arrest complete dicks. It just popped right out. The way he demeaned her, well, all of us, women in general. It'll catch up with him. Sooner or later, he'll pull that shit with the wrong woman. But for now, Mary Kate Covino's a lot more important than he is. He lied about bringing the suitcase up here just to give us grief. I mentally kicked him in the groin several times. Good target, since that's where he lives. I feel there's another way. Like doing a search on former female employees who have either quit or been fired. Wouldn't it be fun if we found some who had a story about leaving his employ due to his sexual treatment of them? Peabody said nothing for nearly 30 seconds. Dallas, Lieutenant, sir, you are my hero. I am mentally kissing you on the mouth. Keep it in your head, or my boot meets your ass. It might be worth it. But my admiration at this moment is too deep to cause your wrath. Can I do it? Please, please. Can I ask McNabb to help? Off duty, our own time. It's all yours. What do you suppose she packed in here? Eve wondered when they reached the street. It weighs a freaking ton. Oh, shit, and I didn't even offer to carry it. So noted. She pulled up the handle, pushed the case at Peabody. Take it to the car, seal it, log it. Contact Covino's boss. Tell them we're coming in. I'll stop by the market and talk to Zell if he's there. He was, and as upset and cooperative as his grandmother. But he couldn't add anything. Still, Eve left a card and a request to contact her if they remembered anything or anyone. They hit the marketing firm next. Eve found a high-energy atmosphere in the converted warehouse. Lots of open space, with splashes and slashes of color, in contrast, likely deliberate, with the industrial framework. She might have equated the sound and movement to EDD, except the denizens weren't dressed like circus performers. What passed as the lobby area looked more like a loungy living area in someone's upscale home. Sofas, chairs, tables arranged in conversational groups, a bar area offering choices of water and soft drinks, coffees, teas, lent an air, certainly deliberate, of casual hospitality. A man and woman worked at the counter, chatting away on earbuds. The woman said, "Hold, please," and tapped hers as Eve and Peabody approached. "Hi, how can I help you?" Eve held up her badge, and the woman hopped up before she could speak. "You're here about MK. Is she okay?"
"Sly, it's about MK."
Her co-worker's eyes widened as he ended the call. "Is she okay?" "We haven't located Ms. Covino. We'd like to see her workspace and speak to her immediate supervisor. I'll take you right up. I've got this, Andy. We only heard about her being missing a little while ago." He led them to a freight elevator. Eve looked longingly at the iron steps leading up to the open upper floors, but got in. "Were you and Ms. Covino friends?"
"We're all friends here. We all thought she was at the beach for a few days with her boyfriend."
"Has anyone come in asking about or for her?"
"Her roommate, Cleo, called this morning, and a detective from the police a little while ago."
"Before that? In the last few weeks?"
"No. I mean, clients, accounts, that sort of thing. Her sister, her brother, or her mom and dad drop in now and again. And Cleo, her roommate, sometimes. Linny's chill with family or friends visiting."
The elevator door clanked open into spacious work areas. No cubes, so staff mixed and mingled as they worked. Offices had doors open. Sly led them to one with a corner view. The woman behind the desk had her feet, clad in red sneaks, on it, and her eyes on a screen where what looked like a family of four enjoyed a rollicking breakfast.
"Linny? Sorry, the police are here."
"Hold, Vid."
Linny swung her feet off the desk, rose to a good 6 feet in height. She wore her ink black hair in a skull cap, had a tiny red stud winking on the right side of her nose, and enormous silver hoops in her ears. She thrust out a hand.
"Linny Dowell, thank you so much for coming. I've got this, Sly, thanks. And close the door."
The minute it did, her brisk welcome turned to fear.
"I recognize you."
"Mary Kate, please, say it fast."
"Ms. Dowell, we haven't located Mary Kate.
We're here because her possible abduction may be connected to another case."
"She's not dead?
You're not here because she was murdered?"
"The NYPSD is actively looking for her."
"All right."
She pressed her fingers to her eyes a moment.
"When I saw you, Rourke Industries is the holy grail of any marketing firm, so I recognized you and thought..."
"Please sit down,"
Can I get you some coffee? A soft drink? We won't keep you long. Whatever you need. We all thought MK was on a little vacation. We're just following up, and we'd like to see your workspace. Have a few minutes with her supervisor. You could say I'm everyone's supervisor, but you'd want Jim. James Mosley, accounts manager and MK's mentor. Hold on. She went to the door, poked her head out. Hey, Nat, go grab Jim for me, would you? They just nailed down a major ad campaign, she told Eve. Jim, MK, Alistair, and Holly. Jim took MK under his wing when she came on board, and he heads most of the projects she works on. How about outside the office? Eve asked. Any socializing? Sure, and quite a lot, actually. We're a friendly group here. My philosophy is community and cooperation over competition. When we hire, we don't just look for talent and work ethic, but personality. Will this person fit? No sharks need apply, she added with a smile. I worked at a firm for 8 years, and that tank was full of sharks. You couldn't be sure from day to day if somebody might swim up and bite your leg off. I climbed out of the tank, juggled finances, talked the bank into a startup loan, and I talked Jim and Selma into coming on. It looks like it worked out, Peabody commented. We're small, but happy. Hey, Jim. Jim Mosley, Lieutenant Dallas and Detective Peabody. Eve gauged Linny at mid-50s and put her colleague about 15 years her senior. He had flyaway gray hair crowning a round cherubic face. He wore baggy jeans and a royal blue polo over a solid, sturdy body. Like Linny, he wore sneakers, his on the battered side. Mary Kate, he said in a voice with the faintest drawl. You found her. We haven't located her as yet. What can I do? What can we do? You worked closely with her. Did she ever mention anyone bothering her? She didn't. She was wrapped up in that slick bar owner. Stars in her eyes, and it wasn't like her. How so? She's grounded, smart, steady. He's just a blip. Not that I said that to her. You don't hear sensible advice when you're in a haze. You met him, stopped in for a drink a couple of times so I could, well, size him up some. We look out for each other here. We're family. Didn't like the look of him. He has user all over him. I'd hoped this trip with him would clear the haze. If he's hurt her, we don't believe that's the case. When did you last see or speak with her? June 3rd, the last day before she started her vacation. The team had wrapped up the Nordo campaign, so I was taking them out for a little unwind time, but she ducked out. She and the bar guy were due to leave the next morning, and she wanted to finish packing. She said, he continued with a smile, believe me, someone as organized as Mary Kate would have had everything in place. But she opted out. We all walked out together. A little after 5, I think. And she peeled off at her subway station. She was lit up, he added. Just lit up. Mosley let out a breath. I wanted her to see him for what he was. Not that I didn't want her to have a good time. She deserved one. But I wanted her to come back shed of him. And all this time. Dear God, Linny. She's smart and she's strong. We're gonna find her. We'd like to see your work area and have a word with Alistair and Holly. Of course, I'll take you. She's a pretty thing, Mosley said as he walked them out, headed for the stairs. Young, pretty. I didn't like the idea of her walking home, even just a few blocks, so late at night from that bar. You knew about that? Her routine? I did. He moved briskly down the stairs, a man in good physical shape who likely used them often. She mentioned she enjoyed helping out at the bar, meeting people, having a little time with what's his name? Tegan Stone. Right. He moved through a maze of workstations and activity, paused at one. I know Holly had a few things to say when it came out she didn't stay the night, and he couldn't be bothered to walk her home. But Mary Kate brushed that off. I don't want to tell you how to do your job, but I'm going to tell you anyway. I think he's a man who could hurt women as well as use them. We're looking at him, Mr. Mosby. All right, okay. This is Mary Kate's workspace. It reflects her. Does it? Organized, efficient, but not rigid. He brushed his fingers over a paperweight that showed a cow jumping over a crescent moon. Other than that and her D&C, there sat a placard that read, "Work smarter, bitch less." Her motto. And as you can see, she kept her area clean. Another motto. We'd like to have her comp and any devices in her desk taken into EDD for analysis. You'll need to clear that with Linny. She's the boss. But I can't imagine her standing in your way. Let me round up Alistair and Holly for you. And if there's anything else I can do, please let me know. Appreciate it. Do you live close by? Actually, I live downtown. Mary Kate and I often took the subway together. Just give me a minute. Run him, Peabody, Eve ordered when he walked away. Yeah, on that. He checks some boxes. They talked to co-workers, arranged for the electronics pickup, and left with a suspect on the list. He's awfully invested in a co-worker under his supervision who's young enough to be his granddaughter. And checks more boxes, Peabody said as they settled into the car. Lives alone, a couple of blocks from Elder's apartment. No marriages, no children, no criminal. Tell me about his mother. Getting there. Adelaide Mosby, née Rowan, died last February at the age of 106. She'd been a resident slash patient for the last 16 years at the Susskind home on Long Island. That's a retirement and elder care facility. Full medical care, including mental and emotional. Prior, Peabody continued, she was a homemaker and church secretary and helpmate. It says helpmate to her husband, Reverend Elijah Mosby, deceased November 2038. They lived in Kentucky until his death. 2 years following that, she moved to New York, James Mosby's address. She doesn't sound like someone who'd dress up like our first victim. But Kentucky's not all that far from Tennessee, where that spangly top came from. And maybe she lived a different kind of life before hooking up with the Reverend. When did they hook up? Married May 1985. So she'd have been about 30. Could have lived a different sort of life in her 20s, which is where our victim falls and the abductions. Theory. Eve played it out as she navigated traffic. Little Jimmy loves Mommy. Mommy's pretty strict. Preacher's wife. Maybe they even, what's the expression? Use the rod, control the child. Spare the rod, spoil the child. Either way, it's nasty. Maybe he blames Daddy for it. Or maybe it's just how life is. But sometime in there, he learns Mommy liked to dress up and party. How does he feel about that? Excited? Appalled? Interested? However he feels, she's the center. Maybe she indulges him, spoils him. Or the opposite, because some kids learn to love the boot when it's all they get. He moved to New York in 2004, at 18. I've got sketchy employment and residence until 2008. Enrolled in community college, add night school, part-time work at what looks like a pizza joint. Got a degree in marketing with a minor in sociology. Took him 5 years. Landed an entry level at someplace called Adverts Unlimited. 5 years there. And he bounced to Young Investor Marketing, 7 years. Climbed up to junior exec before shifting to Digby. That's where he'd have met and worked with Dowell. Where he kept climbing to department head until he left to join Dowell's startup. Wait, there are a couple of gaps. Eve pulled into Central's garage. What and where? 3 month gap, from what I can tell. From April through August of 2031, then another in 38. When his father died. We'll look, but maybe the father got sick in 31. He went back home to help out. Then he goes back when his father died. Digby hired him back both times, but again, what I'm seeing? He took a salary cut. Talk about sharks. And when did Dowell start up? In 2046. We're going to take a deeper look at the parents. Get a good round picture. He hits too many points not to push on it. But... Peabody asked as they got on the elevator. He works with Covino. Hangs out with her now and then outside the office. He knows her routine. But he doesn't grab her first. Okay, maybe her plans for the trip gave him the opening he was after. But he couldn't know those plans would blow up. She'd never spent the night at Teague the Dick's apartment before. He counted on that. Yeah, maybe. Hands in pockets, Eve jingled loose change. Timing feels off. What did his mother look like? Young. I'll find that once we're upstairs. There wouldn't be national ID back when she was in her 20s, even 30s. Right. Dig there. I'm going to shift over to Hobe. See if I can find any other way she could have crossed with Mosby. And she had to push on Rourke's list. Wouldn't it be damn handy if Mosby's residence was on it? Another box checked. As they walked toward homicide, Jenkinson and Reinecke headed back from interview with springs in their steps. We bagged one. Jenkinson held out a fist for his partner to bump. Guy's just trying to teach his girlfriend a lesson, right? Just give her a little tune-up. And what does she do? Reinecke picked it up. Why, that salty bitch shoved him, even slapped him, tried to run. What the hell else was he supposed to do but give her a good beatdown? During which he cracked her skull like an egg, left her dying on the floor in puddles of her own blood and puke, and went out to have himself some waffles. Jenkinson cast his eyes heavenward. Frigging waffles. In their practiced rhythm, Reinecke ran the next. Comes back, finds her dead, and tries to cover it up by busting the door lock from the inside and calling it in like somebody broke in and beat her to death. He's still got her blood spatter on his shoes, Jenkinson added. Changed his shirt, but shoved it into the recycler. And his knuckles are all torn up. His cheeks got her nail marks from eyeball to jaw where she got a piece of him. So he changes his story to add how he saw the guy running out of his place, pursued, got into a tussle. Big guy, like 6'6", this mope claims. And how, when he ran back to the apartment, he found his dead girlfriend. Eve considered. So, did he spill the truth because you scared him out of it with that tie?
Jenkinson gave a closed-lipped grin and fluttered the orange tie covered with purple insects with bugged-out eyes.
It didn't hurt. But we broke him down with our exceptional interview skills. His dumbass stupid didn't hurt either.
Reinecke held out a fist for a second bump.
So you're clear.
Soon as we write this puppy up.
Jenkinson smoothed down his tie. Do that. Then pull the file on Anna Hobe, missing person. Fits the profile for abduction by an unsub who shackled and held Lauren Elder for 10 days before slitting her throat.
The body on the bench near Mavis's new place.
And yours, Jenkinson said to Peabody.
That's right. If he's got Hobe, he's had her for 8 days. Her clock's running down.
Take a look. I could use fresh eyes.
You got it, boss.
Reinecke turned to Jenkinson.
Ready to roll on?
Always ready.
Dig deep as you can, Eve told Peabody. And when you find a photo of the mother in the age range, send it.
Getting my shovel.
Eve hit the AC for coffee the minute she walked into her office. With it, she sat down to update her book and send a fresh report to Mira, including her outline of data, her impressions of James Mosby.
A lot of check marks, Jim, she muttered, and printed out his ID shot to add to her board.
When she completed her board, she sat again, brought up the list Rourke had sent while she'd been in the field,
and checked off another. Mosby's residence was on it.
Took the team out to celebrate, she thought. Like family.
Not a one-off with that.
As head of the department, he took out his team regularly, she'd bet on it. Maybe most often in the area around the firm. But wouldn't he branch out? His own neighborhood, which included Arnold's and Mike's place, Stoner's. She hadn't asked about a man of his age coming in with a group rather than solo. She'd rectify that. He could have seen Hobe that way, noticed her, fixed on her. The same with Elder.
Took care of his mother, she thought as she got up to pace. Brought her to New York to live with him after she was widowed. Set her up in a facility for elder care.
She sat again, searched for data on the facility.
Expensive. She could see that just from the photos. Round-the-clock professional care, body, mind, spirit, they claimed. Gardens, recreation area, therapists, nutritionist. She scanned the options for apartments.
Okay, he hadn't cheaped out on taking care of mommy. And for a dozen years. She considered the drive time to Long Island and decided to take a chance over the link first. She got the initial and expected runaround, but eventually pushed her way to the director.
Elise Grommet, how may I assist you, Lieutenant Dallas?
I'm investigating a homicide and the abductions of two women. I'd like to have some basic information on a former resident patient.
Former?
She died last February. Adelaide Mosby.
I see. You realize privacy laws.
She's dead. And I'm not going to ask at this time about treatments. It would be helpful to my investigation to know her basic condition upon admission, her cause of death.
I can tell you Mrs. Mosby died of heart failure.
She had a heart condition?
No, Lieutenant. Her heart simply stopped beating. She was 106. She hadn't left the grounds for more than 10 years, and given this, I can't see how she could have anything to do with your investigation.
Was she healthy otherwise?
It seems like she was in your facility for a lot of years.
We have many residents who remain at Susskind home for that long and longer.
Why? That's not a privacy violation. It's a basic question. Why would someone remain in your facility for a decade or more?
Gromit had what Eve thought of as a prim sort of mouth. Small, habitually pressed, so it poked out a little. It poked out now. There are many reasons. The individual may no longer wish to or be capable of living alone.
What if they weren't living alone? If they lived with a family member before coming to you?
It may be the family member no longer felt able to provide the necessary care and attention required. We provide both.
At a price. That's not a dig. I've got your website up, and you have what looks like an expansive, well-run facility. But it has to be less costly to, say, hire a health aide or companion. Did Mrs. Mosby require more than that?
Lieutenant, two women are being held against their will.
He's killed once and will again. I need to pursue every angle available to me to save them. What you tell me may help me do that.
After a long pause, Gromit cleared her throat. I'm speaking in generalities, you understand. Explaining, as I might, to anyone inquiring about trusting us with a loved one. We are fully staffed with skilled and caring professionals. When you can no longer care for a loved one, and home help is no longer an option, we offer a safe place, a loving place, a professional place to treat cruel conditions such as advanced dementia, which often includes paranoia and violent outbursts. A loved one may no longer recognize you and become agitated and distressed. We treat both the condition and the individual and are dedicated to helping them feel safe.
Okay. Under those general conditions, would a loved one be allowed or advised to visit?
Of course. We also offer individual therapy and can recommend groups for those family members who are dealing with the pain and frustration of having a loved one who no longer recognizes them, who can't remember, or who only sporadically remembers the life they had together. I'll add, as I can't see it infringes, that Mrs. Mosby was very fortunate to have a loving, devoted son. She was well loved by him and by our caregivers here.
Thanks. If you want more, it will require a warrant, and our legal team will vet same.
Understood. Thank you. I hope you find the women you're looking for.
Yeah, me too.
Eve clicked off, then sat back to study her board. A devoted son. A mother who no longer knew him, so no longer loved him. That could mess you up, couldn't it? Then she dies on you. Maybe you want to bring her back. And bring her back when she's young and vital, as you see it. It could play.
12. She pulled up a map, began to highlight the buildings on Rourke's list. Mosby's residence, a semi-detached townhome, two-story with full basement, fit right in. She might have wished for fully detached and or a garage, but it still worked. Others, townhomes, brownstones, warehouses, private garages, an old converted church, now a privately owned residence, also worked. And when she went through the owners or tenants, she gave Rourke points.